Thanks to Peter Newman for bringing us up to date on all the goings-on. ABC Radio, the time, 8 o'clock.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to this week's edition of Goldfields Magazine. This is Stanley Brown reporting. The federal budget, handed down this week, brought with it the long-awaited news that the government would retain tax concessions for the gold mining industry. I asked John Jones, president of the Amalgamated Prospectors and Leaseholders Association, if this news would revitalise prospecting for gold.
Yes, I think the result that the prospectors achieved in the budget will go a long way to removing the uncertainty that has existed for about 5 years. And I'd like to think that many of our members and other prospectors will see their way clear to invest their capital in gold mining projects with a clear view now that there will not be any risk, I would think, of taxation being imposed on gold mining for some years.
Made many deputations to Canberra and submitted lots of documents for the federal government to consider, obviously you've won the day, and I'm sure all the prospectors are very grateful for the efforts that have been made by the Amalgamated Prospectors and Leaseholders Association. But John, looking at it from the long-term point of view, can you see a boom coming in gold mining if the price of gold is going to stabilise and perhaps rise in the foreseeable future?
Well, that's a very difficult question. You know, to predict a boom, I think, is not perhaps being responsible from my position. We'd be happy to see a greater activity in gold prospecting with reasonable economic circumstances, price of gold, you know, falling of inflation, and I think that's about how I could answer that question. But obviously, we're very pleased about the result, and I think we do take our hats off to Mick Cotter, the local member for Kalgoorlie. He didn't really, at no stage before the budget, gave us any indication of what was going on, but he obviously was doing a lot of hard work, a lot of lobbying, and we're very pleased from the results, his efforts, and I hope that we'll be able to return the gesture to Mr. Cotter at some later date from the association's point of view.
From a personal point of view, what is your assessment of the budget?
Well, I think the budget, I haven't had time really to properly assess all the points in the budget. It looks to be a responsible one. I don't believe the rural members of parliament should be looking towards fuel equalisation. I think that for the reintroduction of that scheme, and it looks as though we've all got to sit down and do some hard work. I don't think it's going to be very easy. I think the recovery is still going to be slow, but I think it is a responsible budget.
What about the additional fuel cost burden?
Well, it will show up. It will help to perhaps fuel the cost escalations with various commodities.
And increase the cost of living, consequently.
I think it'll only be marginal. I mean, I do recall that a number of years ago, we virtually had the exploration for oil in this country turned off by other previous governments. And I think we're all paying the price or the penalty for those decisions, which I thought at that point of time were absolutely ridiculous. And to be responsible, we have to find more oil resources, oil and gas resources in this nation, and the sooner we settle down to do it, the better.
John Jones, thank you. Mr. Finlayson, do you consider the federal budget a good one as far as Kalgoorlie is concerned?
Well, from the point of view of the production of power and the cost of the production of power, I'm alarmed at it, because on the processing of the information, it's scanty at present, but it looks as though when the new price of fuel will finally reach us, that it will increase costs in excess of $200,000 a year. Now, I am alarmed at that escalation in price, because it must affect the cost per unit.
Do you propose doing anything about getting a subsidy to offset the increase in the cost of fuel?
We certainly do. In fact, steps were taken 6 weeks ago to have the state government grant a lower price for the carriage of fuel under what we know as the M rate, so that we could get a price reduction in the cost of fuel coming into our powerhouse. This has been refused by the state government. However, in the light of the new budget proposed cost of fuel, we must go back to the government now again and say, look here, we're calling for assistance, because we want to make quite certain that the cost of power is produced as low as it is possible.
When do you intend presenting this?
Well, it's a matter for council discussion. Mm-hmm. And council cannot discuss it until they have all the facts of the budget and when it is likely that these prices will be imposed.
What other good news do you see arising from the budget?
Oh, the good news, of course, was the rejection of the IAC by the federal government. I'm highly delighted about this, because I can see, as soon as this reaches the investing public, that we're going to see a resurgence in the gold mining industry. There's no possible doubt about that, because that's where the tax-free incentives lie. And I applaud the federal government for their stand on that issue. And it must benefit not only Kalgoorlie, but the whole of the eastern goldfields and anywhere that gold is produced. I say that the future of Kalgoorlie from the gold mining industry is particularly bright in view of the action taken by the federal government.
Could it lead to another mining boom in gold?
Of course it could. That's exactly how booms start. But the one thing that we must do is to endeavour to keep our costs of exploration down.
Mr. Ray Finlayson, thank you.
The president of the Kalgoorlie Chamber of Commerce is Mr. Ron Manners. Mr. Manners, you've said that Mr. Lynch's intentions may have been to stimulate incentive and to get the country moving again, but you would be surprised if this would actually achieve this result. How do you arrive at this conclusion?
Well, I guess, Stanley, there are a few points in the budget that that were designed to get the country moving again. Firstly, there's this partial move toward the flat rate of taxation. In actual effect, the people that are in the well, middle income, the rate that affects most of us is now being set at 32%, but that's pretty close to the rate of marginal tax at the moment. So the average guy is going to say, well, am I tempted to work harder or grab a bit more overtime or exert myself or get some promotion? And he's going to say, no, I'm just up for the same increase in taxation as I would normally. So the actual result is going to be just zero. I think the intent may have been good, but the results are going to be pretty ineffectual. And the other intent was to stamp out, and Mr. Lynch might have put a fair stress on this, the intent was to stamp out all this tax evasion that's going on in Australia. Once again, that may be the intent, but the results are that the accountants in Australia would just become so much smarter and devise more loopholes. I've mentioned that it's become quite normal and commonplace for people to avoid paying as much tax as possible. It's the same precautions you take in locking your home to keep thieves out at night. It's the same type of thing. It's your money. Well, you take the necessary steps to protect it from being allocated elsewhere that you wouldn't allocate it voluntarily. So there's nothing abnormal about this. It happens in all the other countries, and there's nothing changed here on this one. Another example, I think, is the increase in the wellhead price of oil. That's good, because it's going to stimulate further exploration, perhaps lead to greater energy reserves for us. So that's the intention, but the actual result is that we're all going to be paying more for fuel. And that's critical in places like Kalgoorlie, the Pilbara, and other remote productive areas. It's going to increase our costs, and it's going to forestall the new projects and the new jobs that we desperately need. So once again, the intention's good, but the results are not going to be just what they intend.
What are your forecasts regarding Kalgoorlie as an employment centre and as a development mining centre? Can you see times improving as a result of this budget?
Well, we've got plenty of potential. I think everyone in Kalgoorlie agrees that the potential's here. It's just whether we'll ever find our... this potential will find itself in effect brought about. I do feel that we need less government involvement in the area. We want more freedom to produce and more freedom to trade, and these are in line with some of the...
Well, what laws would you like to see removed so that such activity could be commenced?
Well, we through the Chamber of Commerce, we're talking with Minister Graydon at this moment, the Minister for Labour, on the advantages for an area like Kalgoorlie to free up some of the trading restrictions and make it more of an open trading town. We think if we can do that, we'll become a regional centre. People will come to Kalgoorlie for weekends.
So
they'll
the answer, in other words, would lie with the state government?
The state and the federal government. So they have different laws governing different areas.
But the state government could bring this into effect almost immediately.
Oh, sure. On the trading as a trading town, to open it up. On the other hand, the federal government's in charge of export controls. That seems to achieve very little, the controls they impose on exports of minerals. If they withdrew those controls, and also various controls they have from time to time on importation of foreign currency, investment capital, then we'd see Kalgoorlie move on, because the only thing keeping money out is the hassle in bringing it in at the moment.
Mr. Ron Menace, thank you.
Thank you.
I asked a local accountant for his reaction to the overall effectiveness of the federal budget, and just where did this place John Citizen?
In regard to John Citizen, Stanley, and that would be a person receiving an income of under $16,000, under this new 32% rate, at least he now knows that he can work till morning tea time for the government and the rest of the day is his. Under the existing legislation, with a incremental increases in dollars earned, he's discovered that he's been working particularly on Saturdays and Sundays on overtime rates, that he's been working probably up until afternoon tea time for the government and for the rest of the day for himself. So at least he now knows that 32% of the effort goes to the government and the remaining 68% is his. From that aspect, that is good. The area that concerns me, of course, is that to get the Northwest Gas off the ground, they've gone onto the parity with oil. This is going to mean increases in petrol prices, so John Citizen is going to have to pay more for fuel, and as are we all for freight rates and airfares, trains and charter buses and the like. So John Citizen is going to be out of pocket in that regard. But I think the tax attitude for him, I think he's going to feel a lot better, at least knowing that he's going to have a fair portion of the day's effort for himself now.
These benefits are not likely to arise until February. Are you critical of that situation?
I am. I feel that if they're going to make these changes, let's kick it off from the 1st of July 1977. It's like the company tax. They're not only increasing it to 46%, they're having a little bit of as you were, and they're making it retrospective to 12 months ago. Now, to me, I think that's unfair. It's the sort of thing that if you have a change, I think you start from the day that you instigate it. Mr. Lynch has said that he feels that he'll be pegging inflation and there'll be a need for consumer spending in February, and he thinks that's a time to institute these changes. I'd like to see it kick off straight away. I can see a lot of confusion next year with people lodging tax returns, because there'll be 7 months of one system and 5 months of the other.
I may be wrong in jumping to this conclusion, but it would appear that the small businessman is taking on something which is going to be almost impossible to handle, and also the small business operator, those who have their own transport. What is your general view of the position today as far as the business sector is concerned?
Well, Stanley, the Treasurer has done several things. He has retained the investment allowance, which has been a very important incentive for business people generally. It entitles them to a 40% write-off on new plant and equipment and certain other items of the plant. They've also retained the trading stock valuation adjustment, which helps take into account for inflation changes in stock valuations.
In relation to the small business, though, I feel the government's forgotten that the backbone of Australian enterprise today is the small businessman. It's the fellow that's prepared to get out and have a go and invest his own capital and his own labour, and by achieving a profit, in turn, employs fellow Australians. And I'm particularly concerned that the company tax rate has gone up, because there are so many small businessmen who operate through the proprietary company situation, and they have been hit with an increase there. Obviously, in the Goldfields, we've got problems now with increases in freight and the like. The area on companies that concerns me is that public companies don't have to distribute after-tax profits, whereas the family proprietary company is obliged to distribute 40% of its after-tax profits in the form of dividends, and if it doesn't, it is penalised with penalty taxes. To me, there are many private family companies far more worthy of the tax benefits going to some of the public companies that are listed on our stock exchanges today. And I believe the private companies, the small family businesses, are contributing much more to the general welfare of Australia.
Do you think the Federal Treasurer would bear this in mind if he was to receive some appeal from the small business sector?
Yes, I think, watching on national television the other night, Stanley, the president of the Small Businessmen's Bureau from Canberra, he certainly spelled out his feelings, which are, the feelings of most businessmen. Obviously, they can't concede too many points. They've got budgeting problems, and they've got to make the books balance. But I think small businessmen, they pay their tax, and they've got a right to remind the government they are responsible for a lot of the tax that is gathered, and therefore they want to know how it's being spent, and have a bit of a say on where the concession should be going.
In your opinion, what can the small businessman fight back with? He's in a tight corner. Just how can he sort of solve this situation?
Well, he's in a spot in this regard, Stanley, that the tax rates have been set. It's the businessman that's put his money into his business, and in turn is responsible for employing people. He's pegged with, as I say, with companies at 46% taxation. He's got the opportunity of taking the advantage of the investment allowance. That's fine, but it also means he's got to go out into the money market and borrow money and buy additional capital. It's a further commitment on his part. To me, he's painted into a pretty tight corner, and the harder he works, businessmen, of course, they're known to be working 7 days and long hours every day, he gets a bit despondent, because at the end of the year he totals it all up and says, well, by gee, for all that effort on the part of myself and my family, the government are getting more than the lion's share. Mr. Lynch, in his speech, made some reference to people entering into taxation schemes, and I say to him that he should look as to the reasons, and I think the reason from the small businessman's point of view is the fact that he can no longer afford the taxation expense, and that is what it is. It's an absolute profit and loss item. It's an expense of being in business, and to me it's crippling at the moment, and I for one support the small business people and the president from Canberra that keep urging the government for reform. I'm sure that we will see some relief in due course, but as I mentioned earlier, he's got a set of books to balance, but I'd just like to see that balancing done a little bit more in favour of the smaller business sector.
Well, I think we'll leave the budget at that point and pursue another topic. It's well known that there is an oversupply of nickel on the world market, and this, together with the fall in price of nickel, has led to a certain amount of conjecture that nickel mining operations here could be affected. Consequently, considerable speculation has been aroused amongst members of the workforce of Western Mining's Great Boulder operations, who believe that retrenchments might result. Nothing has been said about retrenchments by Western Mining Corporation, and no decision about its nickel operations has been made by the company's board of management at this point of time. The AWU office in Boulder has received many inquiries about possible retrenchments, and Mr. Alf Barwick, secretary of the AWU's mining division, told me yesterday that the union was in constant touch with Western Mining, and there was nothing more he could report.
The well-known American actor, Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., visited Kalgoorlie this week. He stayed overnight and spent a fair amount of time sightseeing, including a visit to Coolgardie. Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. is better known as Inspector Erskine in the TV series FBI. I'm told the girls of Hay Street put on quite a reception for him. Perhaps this could lead to another Sunset Strip series. However, I asked Ephraim Zimbalist why he was in Australia.
Well, I was invited over by Channel 9 to take part in this delightful 72-hole golf tournament in Perth, which ended Sunday, and through their hospitality, I've also been able to come up here to Kalgoorlie and see some of the gold mining country and some of the extraordinary life that existed and still exists around this
Does it remind you of home in any way?
It's very similar, and one gets the feeling of our West, yes. Though there seems to be more left of it than there is of our past in the West, in our West, rather.
Were you proposing to play golf here in Kalgoorlie on the golf course?
No, but we just passed by it and saw it, and it's interesting. I have played once on sand greens, or these aren't exactly sand greens, but dirt greens, rather. But golf wasn't ever contemplated.
Either. I see. This is your main pastime, is it? It's a hobby, golf?
Yes, I enjoy it a great deal. I play a lot of it, and it's obviously a wonderful sport for me because it's brought me to Australia, for example. You know, I mean, it's a great thing to come to a country such as yours, to be fortunate enough to do so, and then to have this bond through golf with so many people that you meet because of the game and play with and so forth. I think quite a wonderful thing.
Mm. Ephraim, are you going to the eastern states at all? Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide?
This trip, just to Melbourne. We're going to Melbourne tomorrow, and we'll be there a day or so, and then we're leaving from there for sort of a golfing voyage back to the States.
A proper golfing holiday, is it?
Yes, we're stopping off at Fiji and Hawaii on the way home to play golf.
Have you won much money at golf?
No, but I'm not allowed to win money. I've won tournaments, but I'm an amateur, so I'm not allowed to win money.
Wouldn't you like to be a professional?
Well, there's nowhere near good enough to be a professional, and I tell you, it's a tough life.
Mm. I think you had a rather hard time in Perth. Some people were saying you were playing with a billet cue. Is that right?
Well, the trouble was that they never told me that they wanted the lowest score. You know, all they did was invite me to play in the tournament. So I thought it was the highest score that was.
Can I ask some personal questions about you? Firstly, about your father. He was a world-famous violinist.
Loudon is due to a professor has supported a concept to turn Kalgoorlie into an enterprise zone. Professor Kenneth Clements of the University of Western Australia told the Kalgoorlie Chamber of Commerce this week a number of economic advantages could be gained from having Kalgoorlie declared as Australia's first enterprise zone. He described an enterprise zone as an area where government regulations and restrictions were eased or exempted. This included government fees, tariffs, and some forms of taxation. Professor Clements said a result of such a move would be to allow free enterprise to do what it knows best, and that is creating jobs and revitalising an economy. He said there was no reason why Kalgoorlie could not become Australia's first enterprise zone.
This area has a lot going for it, in which it could benefit from a lot of freeing up of regulation. For example, there are a lot of regulations, a lot of funny regulations regarding transport in Kalgoorlie. To get to transport things to Kalgoorlie from the eastern states, they first have to go to Perth and then come back. They have to backtrack. Well, this is something which needs to be looked at very closely. Another thing which has to be looked at closely is the two-airline policy in Kalgoorlie for tourists. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to get tourists to go to a place in which they have to backtrack. Tourists hate doing that.
Professor Clements went on to praise the far-sighted approach by the Kalgoorlie Chamber of Commerce towards the issue.